the College Football Fix Podcast. With Paul Meyerberg and Dan Wolkin. This is the College Football Fix Podcast from USA Today Sports.
Welcome back to the College Football Fix Podcast. Dan Wolkin from USA Today Sports here with Paul Meyerberg. Hopefully you guys listened to our first podcast of the season. We did the preseason coaches poll top 25, went through all the teams in it, a few of the teams who didn't make it. But that is definitely the sign that the season is here. And my God, we need that more than ever, because the last couple weeks in college football, at least in terms of off the field stuff, Paul, I would characterize as pretty depressing. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't you?
I would as well. Are we sure we're going to have a season? That's still going to happen, right? Like, college football is not going to decide.
We will play the games.
We will play the games. Okay. Yeah, I think depressing is a good word for it, Dan. What's another good one? Resentful, maybe. I think in some quarters there's a significant amount of resentment about things that have unfolded. I don't think any friends were made these past 10 to 14 days, but more than anything, Dan, I'm like, and maybe you are as well, I'm just reeling by how fast this happened. I know it was like building, but the dam just broke. And in this course of 48, 72 hours, what unfolded here is obviously one of the big stories in recent college sports history. So let's unpack it. Where do you start?
Well, I'll give you a couple more words. Disorienting, surreal, disappointing, not that well thought through, I would say. But yeah, I don't even know where to begin because there's so many different factors here. But let's just start with this. Yes, realignment has always happened. It's gone on for a long time. The seeds of all of this were really planted when the NCAA versus Oklahoma Board of Regents, or actually I think I have that the other way around. I think it was the Oklahoma Board of Regents versus the NCAA, whatever it was a Supreme Court case. The NCAA lost, and it essentially gave all of the schools in the NCAA the opportunity to own and sell their own television rights. Because before, what happened, and I really wasn't old enough to remember this, and I don't think you were either, is the NCAA just said, all right, we're going to put on TV whatever game we want to put on TV. And so there were very few games on television, actually. And Oklahoma, along with some other schools, was able to win that case. And that is how we entered a new era in college football. So these conferences pooled the television rights from all their members and sold them as a package. And then at some point, people started to say, oh, well, certain schools are worth more than others. And if we can get these certain schools to come join our conference, we can make more money for everybody. And yeah, and there were little earthquakes. If you remember back in the day when the ACC took Virginia Tech and Boston College, right, out of the Big East, that was around like 2000, something around there. And then, am I wrong there?
2004, right? 2004, BC, Virginia Tech made that move. Yeah.
Yeah. That was like early 2000s. 2010, you had the Big Ten taking Nebraska, which caused this panic in the Big 12. And the Big 12 was on the verge of falling apart a couple times. And then they stayed together, even though Colorado left for the Pac 12. And then the next year, A&M and Missouri go to the SEC. The Big 12 kind of reforms again. And we're kind of now in this cycle where about every decade we get these realignment situations. And they seem to be more dramatic and more disruptive and less sensical every single time. And now we got a freaking Big 10 that goes from Eugene, Oregon to Piscataway, New Jersey, right?
Right.
Why? Who wants this? I don't want it. I don't think anybody involved wants it, but they have it. And now, as a result, we're essentially looking at the end of the Pac-12. or the Pac-10 or the Pac-8, whatever you want to call it, the Pac conference that was the place for the best in West Coast college sports is essentially dead. And if you're mad about that, I don't blame you because it sucks.
Yeah, I'm upset about that. I think we represent the norm. I think most people are looking at the Pac-12 and seeing looking at that with a huge amount of sadness. Let's dig into that real quick, Dan. I was writing something today. I don't think it's gone online yet. It probably will when we publish this podcast, about just kind of looking back at what's happened, maybe what's going to happen next. And as I was thinking about the Pac-12, I was thinking, despite all the crap we talk about the Pac-12 in a funny way, that's just such a tremendous brand. It's such a powerful brand that I struggle with the concept that it's not going to exist, even from, I'm trying to put myself in the shoes of these money-hungry administrators and TV partners. That's a huge brand. How could the Pac-12 not exist in some form? You know what I mean? It's like, if we do get to the point where the Pac-12 and the Mountain West do merge, if that is something that is on the table or could happen in the next 8-12 months, they got to be called the Pac-12, right? Here's my thing, and you kind of hit on it. I just can't imagine a world of college sports where the Pac-12 doesn't exist. The West Coast is not represented in college sports with its own conference. I'm really struggling with that. Do you think there's a way or an avenue that's realistic where the Pac-12 can reform in some way or another and just continue to exist even in a diminished way?
Yeah, I think the brand could potentially carry on. Now, that's going to depend on a lot of factors that we just don't know right now which way they're going to fall. But yeah, it was the Conference of Champions, right? And yeah, they didn't win the BCS championship outside of USC. They hadn't really been a huge part of the college football playoff. You had one Oregon team make the final. You had a Washington team make the semi. But they had been pretty disappointing in the college football playoff era. In men's basketball, they had not won a national title since Arizona, 1997. Pretty long time. Now, there had been good basketball. UCLA had made several Final Fours and all of that. But you look at the overall picture of college sports, lots of national championships in, you know, women's basketball, tennis, soccer, track and field, swimming, like everything else. They won, those schools won a lot of national championships. And a couple of them in particular, Stanford and Cal, won a lot of those. And now they don't have a conference to play in, really. I mean, they could potentially, depending on what they do in the next several weeks. But, you know, look, Oregon State, Washington State, I feel for those programs. Those are real fan bases. Those are schools that have put a lot of money into facilities. They've tried to be competitive. But it's not that crazy that in a major realignment scenario that a Washington State or an Oregon State could get left behind. That's not crazy to me, right? Because they're not in big markets. They're kind of the number two schools in the state they're in. It's kind of one of those things. They haven't won at the highest level historically. But like Cal and Stanford, two teams in the Bay Area with all the money that their alums have made in tech and all these other industries, like all the national championships they've won. Until a couple years ago, Stanford was like a very legit football program. Mm-hmm. To me, yes, the idea that the Pac-12 might go extinct is bizarre and unsettling. Mm-hmm. But we've kind of seen that before. Like we saw the Southwest Conference dissolve at one point. What we haven't seen that I can tell is schools that have, you know, the academic rigor and reputation, the success in a variety of sports, and just the big brand name and market size of a Cal and Stanford totally get screwed in realignment. That to me is a new frontier.
Yeah. Who we play the blame game here, because that's what we do as people. Who do you think warrants to shoulder the blame for this? Is it the former commissioner, current commissioner? Is that too narrow? Is it really not the Pac-12's fault at all? Is it the hunger and the greed maybe of other leagues? Where do you fall in terms of placing the onus for this?
I think it's an all of the above scenario. I think, yes, Larry Scott made major mistakes in managing their last media deal. They couldn't get the Pac-12 network distributed properly because the Pac-12 decided they were going to own the network as opposed to partnering with an ESPN or a Fox or something like right. that. That was a major problem. George Kliavkov made a litany of mistakes that we could certainly talk about. He has come across like totally in over his head and naive about just kind of the way everything works. But you also have to blame the presidents in the Pac-12. I think there was a lot of arrogance over the years about, you know, expansion opportunities they passed on. There's been arrogance about academic, you know, certain schools just, you know, you can't add BYU to the Pac-12. You can't add Boise State to the Pac-12. You know, so there was kind of this snobbery going on that left them maybe more vulnerable. When Oklahoma and Texas left for the SEC, they were approached by the Big 12 about some type of merger, and the Pac-12 turned it down, which that falls on the presidents as well. Mm-hmm. So I think everybody's got some blame, as well as just some factors that are, frankly, out of everybody's control. I've talked about this before. Football participation numbers on the West Coast, not so great over the last decade. That has caused some of those schools to have some issues in recruiting, at least relative to the Big 12, the SEC, the ACC, and the Big 10. And, you know, the fan bases, by and large, are maybe just not quite as large or as fervent as you know, their counterparts. Like, if you had an SEC network and said, we're not going to be able to have wide distribution of the SEC network in Alabama, there would be rioting on the streets, right? In the state of California, nobody's going to spend 2 minutes thinking about that. They're just going to, you know, be mad and go find something else to do. So I think all of it's to blame. I don't think there's one scapegoat. I think people trying to pin it all on Larry Scott are kind of missing the mark here.
Yeah, I guess the follow-up, and I think I know the answer based off what you said, if you go back 18 months, knowing what you know now, and you're the new commissioner of the Pac-12, you yourself, could you have stopped this? Like, what could the Pac-12 have done? I mean, I know you mentioned the merger. Let's throw that out. What could the Pac-12 have done proactively, knowing what you know now, to fend this off? Is there any way that they could have stopped this? Or is this, like you said, this is the 10-year cycle and the Pac-12 got left without a share?
Well, there are two things, one of which they may not have been able to control, one of which they would have. The thing they may not have been able to control is keeping USC and UCLA. And, you know, there's never been, as far as I know, a great explanation for why the Pac-12 was so blindsided by that, and it seems they were blindsided by it. Was there really not any intelligence on that? Was there anything the Pac-12 did or didn't do under Kliavkov in the months leading up to that that might have been able to placate the concerns of USC and UCLA? Because I think what we've found out subsequent to that is the conference just lost a ton of value without those two schools located in the second biggest media market in the country.
Right.
Now, if you take that off the table and say, all right, that's gone, nothing they could do about that, USC just was determined to get out, what else could they have done? Well, the big mistake that was made was they let the Big 12 jump in line in front of them to sign a media rights deal. The way the cycle was supposed to go, the Pac-12 was supposed to have their deal done before the Big 12 got their deal done, because the Big 12 had, I think the Pac-12 would have had about a year head start on the negotiating process in the typical way you would do it, like a couple years before the contract runs out. Well, mm-hmm. Brett Yormark, the commissioner of the Big 12, very intelligently said, all right, we're going to take a deal, and we're going to do a deal right now. We're not going to wait our turn. We're just going to do it. And he got it done with Fox and ESPN. And as we know now, in retrospect, that tied up a lot of the capital that those networks had to spend on media rights. at a time where the cable industry is getting smaller, there's less revenue coming in, and there's less appetite for those big networks to spend a lot of money on sports rights unless they're getting the premium stuff. Like, yeah, they'll spend on the NBA, they'll spend on the NFL, but college sports, and particularly the Pac-12, a much more niche product that is not going to get the same type of eyeballs on a consistent basis. So I think the Pac-12 overestimated their worth in that market, thinking they could get a much better deal than what ESPN was offering or what Fox was offering for a small number of games. And at the end of the day, all they had was this Apple deal. And there were schools like Arizona and Oregon or whatever, Washington as well, that I think were rightly concerned about having most, if not all, of your stuff on streaming as opposed to actual television. Maybe streaming will be the only way we watch sports, but that's not the way it is now. And I think there was a real concern about losing visibility in addition to not making nearly as much money as the Big 12 or the ACC.
You think Stanford and Cal could, like, I see them, these stories coming out of the ACC. That seems a little bit laughable to me. I'm sorry. But can Cal and Stanford be appealing to the Big Ten? Could they be, because they could tout, like you said, the Bay Area, they can tout Olympic sport successes beyond your wildest imagination. They can tout academic rigor. What is their best home, and is there a real home for them that doesn't involve them playing NC State at noon on a Saturday?
I think the presidents in the Big Ten had an interest in Cal and Stanford because of the academic strength of those schools and the reputation and the fact they would fit in to the Big Ten as sort of peer like-minded institutions in that way. But let's remember, the television networks are calling a lot of the shots here, and the information that came back was those two schools don't get ratings. People don't watch them at the same level they do Oregon and Washington. And so that's how you end up with Oregon and Washington in the Big Ten and Cal and Stanford not. It's simple as that. Simple as that. It's all about television, which leads me to the other thing we were talking about, which is how do you reform? What do you do? Like, this is where I think there's a real problem because, okay, you've got four remaining schools tied to the Pac-12. You're going to need at least five more to have a viable league at some point. In theory, I think the Pac-12 could pull maybe the four or five best schools from the Mountain West and have a league that kind of makes sense. I mean, Stanford would not be happy to be playing UNLV and San Diego State and Fresno State, most likely, because Stanford kind of looks down their nose at schools like that. But when you don't have any other options, you got to take some. You got to take the best one available. And that would be the best one available. And potentially, it's a league that would be, I don't know, maybe similar to or better or a little better than the American, but certainly lesser than other leagues, the other leagues above them. But the problem is, to get out of the Mountain West, those schools would have to pay, especially for next year, 2024, they'd have to pay in excess of $30 million. So you'd have to maybe take enough schools to have the Mountain West dissolve. Or, you know, maybe there's a way to get some American Athletic Conference schools to, like, give you a minimum number, and then later you take some Mountain West schools. Like, could the Pac-12 leftovers somehow get SMU, Tulane, Memphis, and Rice or something like that? Like, could they do that? I don't know. Maybe.
Sounds terrible.
But then again, one more thing. Those schools, by the way, are on ESPN in the American, and they know how much money they're getting from that media deal. Now, they'd certainly like to make a lot more, but are they going to make a ton more playing in a reformed Pac-12 when you add all the extra travel expense? I don't know. That someone's going to have to put pen to paper on that to convince me. So not a lot of good options, unfortunately.
One thing that's going to fall out from this, Dan, and maybe this is getting too far ahead of where we are in this conversation, but pretty clear the playoff is going to redo their 12-team model. Not change the 12 teams, but they're going to have to redo it, because if you remember correctly, it was 6 plus 6. What do you think? Obviously, SEC and maybe even Big Ten to a degree is going to say, give us the best 12. More logically, I would imagine it's going to be 5 plus 7. Do you have any thoughts on it or any preference where you'd like them to go?
So I'm not 100% sure about this, but I believe that they have to do 6 plus 6, because I think they've already agreed on it for the first couple of years until the playoff contract runs out. I believe they've already agreed on that, right?
So I got to look that up. That's a good question.
So to change it, they would have to actually have unanimous agreement among the leagues, and I don't think they're going to have that. Mm-hmm. So I think at least at the start we're getting 6 plus 6, but I could be wrong on that. But that's just at least now, and this is sort of one of those issues that's out there and people know about it and they're going to talk about it, but it's kind of like the back burner right now, because mm-hmm. this has been such a shock to the system. They'll get to it at some point. But going forward, like after you get through this initial contract and they have to start over and sell those TV rights for the 12-team playoff starting in 2026, there's no question in my mind the SEC and the Big Ten are going to be pushing for fewer automatic bids and more at-larges. Mm-hmm. Why? Because they have, at least as of now, they're going to have, what's 18 plus 16, 34? They're going to essentially have half of the Power Five, of what we knew as the Power Five, right? Mm-hmm. So I would imagine they're going to want half the spots for themselves, I would think, in some way. Or maybe they're going to say, "What? Yeah, no automatics, all at larges." I don't know that their colleagues in the other leagues are going to go for that. And frankly, I don't think that's what it should be. I like the idea of automatic qualifiers when your conference get in. But where is that number going to fall? Is it going to be 5 plus 7, 4 plus 8, 3 plus 9? You know, I don't know.
Yeah. Do you think that these are – let's step away from the Pac-12 and the playoff and look at the Big Ten and the Big 12. Start with the Big Ten. Do you like this addition? Like, it's hard to in terms of the brands and the teams they're adding, do you think it moves the needle for the Big Ten? And if not, why?
I like all the teams. Like, the teams they picked are fine. Like, they have great – those are great schools. And, yeah, when Oregon and Washington and USC and UCLA are on, like, those are four of the schools that people will generally watch for a lot of reasons. They know the names, the uniforms, the history, whatever, right? But they're not Big Ten schools. I mean, at least not in the way that – look – when you said the name of a conference, it meant something. It meant something in terms of the style of play. It meant something in terms of the coaches. It meant something in terms of the fan bases. It meant something in terms of what you expect the sky to look like in the stadium in October, November, December. Mm-hmm. It evoked images and feelings. But as we've moved further into the conference realignment process, these are not conferences like we knew them. What they are Applebee's, TGI Fridays, and Outback Steakhouse. That's what these conferences are. They're chain restaurants. That's what they are. They have no character. They have nothing that distinguishes them anymore. They're just conglomerations of things on a menu. That's what they are. Yeah. And that, to me, takes a huge part of the fabric of college sports away. Because if that's what it is, why have conferences at all? Why not just take the 30 or 40 best teams and just play your own league?
Sure.
Which is maybe where we're all heading anyway.
We're all heading that way, right. So that would make the Pac-12 like Kenny Rogers Roasters, right? R.I.P. Kenny Rogers Roasters, my favorite chicken place back in the day. Hey, look, it's almost like I wish we as people, as Americans, and in college sports in particular, could look at past examples where we got out over our skis a little bit. If only we had some examples at our disposal, like, say, the housing market, or like, say, student loan debt and reconsolidation, or the opioid crisis, or like when strip mining happens, when hedge funds buy newspapers and try to milk every cent of profit out of the good times. If only we could look back and realize that maybe chasing dollars and cents in the immediate sense is not great for our future. Do you think that anyone cares, though? Like, do you think that administrators care about 10 years from now? Maybe they do. Maybe they have. Maybe they are thinking that way. This ensures our 10-year plan. But I just don't see that being that important. They're looking at dollars and cents right now, right? Like, hey, we're going to make $30 million more next year. They don't care about 10 years, right?
I don't think anybody in college sports likes or enjoys the process or what all of this has become. But what they'll tell you is just, you have to be, for your own viability, you have to be affiliated with one of these leagues, making a certain amount of money coming in, and, you know, or else the consequences are about like what you're going to be seeing at Cal and Stanford, which is a significant, at minimum, a significant change in the budget. You know, athletic departments that have been running, you know, $80, $90, $100 million expenses based on, you know, they get X amount of dollars from their conference. Well, if that number goes from 30 to 10, that significantly changes how you have to budget and what you can spend money on. And you know, now look, there's a lot of waste, a lot of largesse in college sports. Like, do you really need to pay certain coaches $7, $8, $9 million? Do you really need to spend what you're spending on some of the Olympic sports? I did a big story a couple years ago looking at how much all the Olympic sport coaches make. I mean, there's a lot of Olympic sport coaches that are making $400,000, $500,000, $600,000 for sports that bring in zero revenue whatsoever. There's a lot of, you know, spending on facilities that isn't really necessary. Like, basically, because all of these are nonprofits, they have to spend all of this money and they find ways to spend it. And maybe in a lot of cases, like, if you just sort of pull back, you can survive on less. But nobody wants to survive on less. You don't want to survive on less. I don't want to survive on less. Everybody's looking for more and to live the lifestyle they're accustomed to. So that is the problem with college sports. And that's why these schools, yeah, they know it's bad and they know exactly what they're doing, but they are looking at it from the standpoint of, all right, it's either we have a significant change in our standard of living or we just go along with wherever, you know, we can land, and that's how you end up here.
Yeah. So what's next then? I mean, we know about the Pac-4 and the Mountain West. We talked about that. But what's the next move that's going to trigger something else? I mean, is it just Florida State getting fed up and doing – I mean, there's so many hoops to jump through. It's not that easy. But is the next move someone like that just saying enough is enough and triggering something crazy? Or is it Notre Dame? What's next?
Well, I think Notre Dame's in a spot where they don't have to do anything. They seem to continue to be able to walk between the raindrops.
Yeah.
And just be the independent – that they want to be. The only thing that's going to force Notre Dame out of independence is if literally they end up in a system where you have to be in this one super conference to be part of the highest level of college football. As long as people will schedule them and they have access to the playoff, I don't think Notre Dame needs to do anything. And they can, you know, get money from NBC or whoever. Like, and they seem to be checking off all those boxes all the time. As far as like the SEC, does the SEC need to expand? No, not really. But the SEC is certainly going to be involved if the ACC implodes. And as you mentioned, Florida State is unhappy. Clemson's unhappy. It's interesting. Like, So the three that are least happy in the ACC right now with the money they're making are Clemson, Florida State, Miami. If interestingly, though, I believe, based on, you know, the people I talk to, it's not just as simple as if Florida State and Clemson somehow are able to break free that they just automatically get folded into the SEC. I think, frankly, the SEC might be just as interested or more interested in like a North Carolina-Virginia combination, yeah, because they don't really have that area of the country. There's a lot of people in those two states. There's a lot of recruits in those two states. And there's a lot of television sets. You can have the SEC network. So I think, you know, if I were to just place bets on, all right, if the SEC goes to 18 at some point, I might say Virginia, North Carolina, as opposed to Clemson, Florida State.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I do think there's, like you said, there's depth to this, like, departure nonsense. It's not just playing, you know, the exit fee, which is astronomical. But you also have to come to agreement about broadcasting your games because the AC Network, because that's part of the grant of rights, the AC Network would own your games. It's just really complicated to get through that mess. But it does seem to me like the next frontier of, or maybe the thing that triggers the super conference lifestyle is when Clemson or when Florida State or when Miami becomes available, then it's really all bets are off. I mean, SEC at that point or the Big Ten or someone is going to leap up and take them and push their membership to 20 or more. That seems like a tipping point to me. Do you agree with that? That those guys, I mean, I know you mentioned NC and Virginia, but those three brands in particular might represent the next wave of realignment that really ushers in a seismic move like we had last week.
Look, Florida State has been about as public and as belligerent as I've ever seen administrators from a school talk about wanting to get out of a conference. Like, it's a little off-putting and bizarre that some of the comments that we're seeing come out of Florida State, it's very clear they believe that they're not well-positioned in the ACC. Now, I would push back on that and say, why? Like, why do you think that? Like, look at the recruiting that's finally – I think it's finally starting to roll their direction. Like, they've had some bad years. They made some bad coaching hires. But, you know, they're finally, I think, getting things together under Mike Norvell. Like, we'll see what happens this year. But if you were to say, like, where is Florida State likeliest to win a national championship or make the college football playoff from, I would say 100% it's out of the ACC, where they have a relatively easy path, or they at least don't have the same type of schedule that you have in the SEC. And you can kind of like dominate that conference. Maybe you can convince them. They've already convinced them to do some merit-based revenue adjustments, and maybe they can even get to an unequal revenue share situation where they make even more money. But I would just say, like, for Clemson and Florida State, yeah, you may have to do more with a little less money, but you can still do a lot, and you have a better situation competitively where you are now as opposed to trying to go play in the SEC where you're going to get your head beat in every week by, yeah, you know, just start naming schools. Like, why do that? Yeah, well, but why leave? Like, I don't understand it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't really understand it either, especially like we mentioned a moment ago that you could have still a 5+7 and you're going to get into the playoff every single year. Just win the ACC and you're in every single year. But Dan, I think that leads to a question, and maybe you know the answer. I don't know what the answer is. If you polled 100 college presidents or 100 college athletic directors, college administrators, let's just say that, what matters more, a national championship or your bank account? You know what I mean? Like, what is the be-all, end-all for college sports right now? Is it to succeed, to win, to have success, or is it to be on TV and to make your university money? Has the mission statement changed for these athletic programs? And if so, like, who cares if you're not winning the ACC? Do whatever you have to do to get out of there then.
Yeah, the other thing that is kind of out there, though, that I know a lot of these schools are thinking about is what happens if/when the federal government or the Supreme Court rules that players are employees and they have to share revenues at all these schools, right? And so that's sort of the next thing out there that people are wondering about positioning for. All right, so let's say that happens. Are we going to end up sort of in a thing where, all right, some schools are paying and some schools aren't? Is there, you know, is football going to break out of the NCAA structure, out of the university structure? There's a way, actually, a model that's out there, at least an idea of it, where college football essentially breaks away from college, period. And it becomes a league, essentially a de facto professional league. And these teams just sublicense, you know, the logos and the school names and whatever. So the Florida State Seminoles would be the Florida State Seminoles, but they wouldn't actually be formally affiliated with Florida State other than through a marketing deal, right? It's sort of like,
oh my God.
No, I mean not to bring up a totally, you know, different subject, but like Donald Trump was not building a lot of these buildings, right? He was just sort of lending his name to them, and they were paying him to put his name on the building. Oh, this is the Trump, you know, International Plaza or whatever. Like that could be the future of college football. Something like that.
Please, God. Please, God. Tell Donald Trump to buy Rutgers. I want to be known as the Trump Scarlet Knights. Please. And have them go 1-11. That's hilarious. Actually, I would like it a lot more if they were like the teams from movies that don't get permission. So they're like the DC, I was going to say Commanders, but that's the real name. The DC Commandos, you know what I mean? The Tallahassee Sentries. You know, I would like that a lot more. Low budget knockoff brand teams instead of real university teams. Trump is going to be involved in this. I'm going to give him a call.
In the Saudis as well, for sure.
Definitely. You're gonna get the money. Come on.
Yeah, but it could end up in something like that. And so is the next iteration of it, all right, the schools that are going to pay or that have the resources to pay players, are they going to end up in a league and everybody else sort of becomes a little bit more, you know, FCS-ish? There's a lot of different ways it can go, but if you just think about how different and how many changes this sport has seen just since 2010, I mean, we're only talking 13 years. It's not really a long time in the grand scheme of things. Think about what it's going to look like 13 years from now. Probably it's going to look like something we are not even envisioning, because we certainly would not have envisioned this back in 2010.
I'll tell you, 2036. Robot football. Robot football.
Well,
Cal and Stanford will return to prominence on the backs of AI, technologically advanced, sentient robot quarterbacks.
Hey, at the 2021 Olympics in Tokyo, I saw a robot basketball player who was out swishing threes from half court every game.
Hey, when we were in Pyeongchang, I saw an AI robot cleaning the floors. It wasn't an AI robot. It was just a dustpan with a big robot container over the top, but we're making strides towards a robot quarterback, essentially.
No, it's coming.
Is the NCAA have a rule against if I got an arm transplant and got a like a Winter Soldier, Captain America arm, would that be allowed even? There's no rules against bionics or cybernetics, right?
I think you have just come up with something they need to address in the bylaws at the next convention.
Can you imagine if I go to the convention? Charlie Baker's there. I said, Governor, where do you stand on the marriage of football and biometrics? Or not biometrics, bionics. Let's do it. Why not?
Yes. Well, speaking of Charlie Baker, he sort of came out of his bunker yesterday to issue this sort of, you know, statement that he's doesn't love what's going on. It's almost comical, because it just shows you how useless in some ways the NCAA is, that this is all happening with some of the most important schools under the NCAA umbrella, and yet the NCAA has zero, nada, to do with it, to say about it, whatever. Like, they are just out of the ball game at this point. And, you know, Charlie Baker is spending all his time in Washington lobbying congressmen and senators on NIL. Maybe you should be lobbying him on this stuff. Like, because to me, this is the existential threat to college sports, that you're going to end up with 30 schools that matter and everybody else can go pound sand. That's the existential threat, not NIL and all this other stuff that he's gotten, you know, that Joe Manchin and Tommy Tuberville want to put in a bill.
I can't imagine anyone in Congress, even though he's the only football coach there that I know of, who would be a worse person to guide and create the framework of an NIL package than Tommy Tuberville. That's off topic. We haven't talked about Tuberville in a while. Did I ever tell you about the time when I went to Texas Tech and they told me about how he would never leave his office, just watch CNBC all day? Did I ever tell you that Tommy Tuberville story?
Yeah, he was big in the stock market.
Big in the stock market. He wasn't good at it, but he was big into it. Charlie Baker, going back to Baker, his comments are like, it's like when someone eats a hamburger on television and PETA, I get a PETA email in my inbox. Essentially, it's the same thing. He's the, you know, that Simpsons meme, like old man yells at cloud, that thing that you see online sometimes. He's not old man, and he's a very accomplished individual. That's basically what is happening with Charlie Baker and the NCAA, right? They're just, they like will pop up, say something, and then go back down, and everyone will be like, who was that? What was that, the president of the NCAA? What is he doing here? I just don't understand that whole, like you said, that whole point of view seems so off the mark. Like, yeah. So off the mark. Like, how could you miss the point that badly? You're talking about NIL? You're talking about the dude, the 99% of guys who are getting a Raising Cane's coupon? And you're not talking about these administrators who are tearing apart the fabric of college sports? That should be where their focus is. Unfortunately, it's very clear to me, as you know, that it's not. So this is going to continue unabated, right? This is not going to stop.
There's no mechanism to stop it. That's the problem, you know. And these media rights negotiations, they're happening, you know, every 6-7 years. And so all the decisions are going to be made by the media rights negotiations. And I've brought this up. Others have brought it up. What happens at some point? Maybe it's the next one, or maybe it's the one after that, where you're Alabama, you're Georgia, you're Florida, and you're looking at this and going, I'm sorry, why is Mississippi State, Vanderbilt, and Kentucky making the same amount of money as we are? Right. What's happening there? How does that work? Because, like, we're the ones who are actually bringing the value to the conference, not them. That's where this is going next. It has to.
Well, I would like to see Alabama go out on its own. Is that an option?
I mean, they could if they wanted to. I don't think they want to right now, but...
Yeah, I mean, that's an option. I'd like to see them go out on their own. Like, if it's all about making the most money possible, like you said, like, screw Vanderbilt. Screw Mississippi State. Send Nick Saban up to Raycom Sports or, you know, NBC and be like, we just want to be on TV. I understand that I'm basically saying Alabama should go independent. But maybe the future is, Dan, like the 32-team NFL equivalent, and everybody, well, at that point, it would make too much sense to band together. But you know what I mean? Like, if you want to make the most amount of money that you can get, seems like the best plan of action might be just go out on your own. Why not?
You know, by the way, another thing that's come up this week that is just absolutely grinding my gears is anytime I see one of our colleagues on Twitter, and God bless them, you know, love these people. But I've seen a lot of this week. Oh, this is the most important season of college football ever. We have to savor it. We need to just live in it. We just need to live in it for this year. We need to savor it because it's all going to break apart. Stop. Just stop. Let's not be so precious about this. Like, I'm sorry. This is ridiculous what's happened to the Pac-12, but this ain't the first and it's not the last. Okay, we've been in these situations before. You know, cry me a river. I didn't see your tears for you know, for back in the day when, you know, Louisville and Cincinnati broke up the old Conference USA, right, when they went to the Big East, right? Like, stop, okay? Second of all, you're going to be right back here in a year talking about how you're so excited for the season, okay?
Because it's the playoff, the new playoff. This is the biggest year ever. That'll be the talk next year. This is going to be the best year ever. We got a 12-team playoff. I can't wait.
Yeah, and again, I don't. It's not a personal thing, and I don't mean to be critical of colleagues. They're wonderful at what they do, and they're great. I'm just like let's not be precious about this. I think that's totally the wrong sentiment at this particular time.
Are they all good at what they do, though?
Yes. Okay. We let's not go there.
Sorry. I was just joking. I was trying. I went on to my Twitter account right now to try to find an example for people. So I was just trying to kill time, but I can't find an example. I saw these two. They're very, very funny. Soak it up. Take a bath with it. It's going to be the best season ever. I'm sorry. I'm getting choked up.
Smell the odor. Mm.
Every year is the best one ever. It's the first one since last year. That means it's the best one yet. I don't know. Seems pretty simple to me. Hey, Dan, should we finish with a question I wanted to ask you last week? It's not about college football. Have you seen Oppenheimer? Have you seen Barbie? Have you watched either one of these movies? Are you going to see either one of these movies? Did you Barbenheimer double feature? What have you done?
No, I have not done Barbenheimer or whatever you call it. I probably won't. I can't really envision myself watching the Barbie movie unless, not that there's anything wrong with it, unless like my niece or something, I'm happy to be with my niece and they want to watch it, you know, something like that.
Mm-hmm. So you're anti women.
No,
is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Okay. So why won't you see Oppenheimer? You're anti science?
boy, you are
just trying to edit. This has been such a downer of a podcast episode. I just wanted to bring it up. I want to give people a reason to come back. We will have fun more often than not on this podcast.
I think you should apply to be the new Meet the Press host.
I can't be any worse than what's his face. I've been watching him for years. He's gotten progressively worse. What is his name?
Chuck Todd.
Right.
Yeah.
Again,
big,
Chuck Todd.
Big
like,
Miami
he's
fan,
like,
by the way.
He's like Charlie Baker. Like, it's hard to dismiss Chuck Todd. He's hosting Meet the Press, but I feel like I could do just as good a job.
Well, he's leaving, so I think there's an opening there. I don't know if they filmed it. So I'm gonna nominate you just based on that.
This is we're recording this with a video portion as well. So this is my highlight reel.
These are real. But no, let me just go back to Oppenheimer for a second because I actually think this is a key point to understand me. Which is, I don't really watch movies anymore. It's weird. So when I was growing up and like all through college, I took film classes. When I got out of college for a while, like I was big into movies. I would watch all the Oscar-nominated movies. I knew, you know, I knew what I thought should win and what should be nominated, and I was big into it. And then once we got to like the Netflix era where you had all these good TV shows, I just sort of was like, I'd rather watch a good TV series than a movie. And it doesn't make any sense. It's like, it's a little like conference realignment. If I'm hooked on a show and I'm not doing anything, like I could probably sit there and reel off three or four episodes in a row and spend 3-4 hours on the couch watching a show, but I will not sit there for 2.5 hours and watch a movie. What's wrong with me? There's probably a lot of things wrong with me.
That is weird though, but I understand where you're coming from. There's a sort of attention to detail to movies that is different than a TV show. You know what I mean? You can TV show and do other things on the couch, but you a movie demands your attention. I think Oppenheimer probably is one of those films. It's going to be make you watch.
When is Oppenheimer supposed to be available on streaming? Do we know? Have they said? Because that's probably when I'll watch
it. 3 months? 3 or 4 months? I guess it depends when it leaves the theaters. But there's obviously a famous quote. It's not Oppenheimer himself, but he borrowed it. And I think it works really well for realignment. It's from the Bhagavad. I have become death, destroyer of worlds. That's our quote of the day from Oppenheimer to sum up conference realignment. Okay. Too deep?
Boy, we're really wrapping it all up in a neat little bow here.
This is why this is the 29th ranked college football podcast on the internet right now.
May have more to do with the fact that we are only doing it in season at this point.
Because we take 8 months off? Is that why? All right. Well, look, hey, if you're listening, we've got a whole season ahead. It's August 8th. This will August 9th when this comes out. And the season will last until January 9th. So we'll be going every week. We'll probably put an extra week in between in December. But we're going to be here weekly every Tuesday for Wednesday, right? Retalk Tuesday, publish Wednesday.
I think that's the plan. That sort of gives us a nice little window to recap what happened the previous week and to look ahead. And that's kind of what we do here on the College Football Fix podcast. And with that, we will wrap it up for this edition. For our producer Chandler in the studio, our college sports editor Eric Smith, and for Paul Meyerberg, I'm Dan Wolkin. We'll talk to you guys next time.
The College Football Fix podcast. With Paul Meyerberg and Dan Wolkin. This is the College Football Fix podcast from USA Today Sports.